We're all virtually limitless.
This podcast is to provide a space for people to grow,
to rise,
and build. This is for the people that are ready to step up and make moves, no matter where they came from. Welcome to the podcast.
Virtually limitless. This life we live, we get to choose. We can make excuses or make moves.
It's up to you.
Yeah, your network is your network.
So find your tribe or build it.
There's some change about to happen. I can feel it. Oh, this life we were given it. So take advantage, start living
it. I'm on a mission, new beginnings to start living.
Yeah, virtually limitless.
You are tuning in to another episode of.
This is another episode of Virtually Limitless.
What's going on, Virtually Limitless entrepreneurs? It's your man here, Trey Carmichael, coming at you with another episode of the Virtually Limitless podcast. And today I'm coming at you with my man, Michael Alden. Why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about what you do and why you do it for the people who don't know you, my man?
Hey, well, thanks so much for having me. I really, really appreciate it. Well, geez, I always have trouble answering that question. You know, what exactly do I do? Well, you know, and I finally just come to the realization that I'm an entrepreneur. Okay. I'm a lawyer by trade. And I've been an entrepreneur since day one, though, before I was a lawyer. You know, I was the kid that was selling lemonade, at the end of the street, and I franchised it and had multiple lemonade stands with my friends and having paper outs and shoveling, you know, snow in the winter. So I'm just, you know, again, that classic entrepreneur. I just love business. And so whether it be, you know, helping people, you know, whether they're books or whether it be writing books is which kind of my thing. I'm a 3-time Wall Street Journal, USA Today bestselling author, or is it building businesses, you know, to 9 figures? I mean, my businesses have generated hundreds of millions of dollars. But at the same time, you know, I'm also as real as it gets. You know, I don't sugarcoat things. I let people know that, you know, being an entrepreneur and the life of an entrepreneur is not easy. So that's kind of like the quick little Reader's Digest version of kind of who I am and where I'm at now. And maybe we'll get into some more.
Awesome, man. Well, I definitely want to get into a little bit more. Who were you before you were Mike the lawyer?
So that's a great question, man. So I was Mike, the kid that grew up in the projects. You know, my mom's HIV positive. My stepfather died of AIDS. My father was addicted to coke. Kid I grew up with was in jail for life for murder. One of my brothers did time for distribution. Another brother died of an overdose. My stepmother just recently died of an overdose. Another brother was in rehab for a heroin addiction. And I wasn't the best kid either. You know, what I was lucky about though is I never, you know, smoked a cigarette, never did any drugs, and wasn't really kind of like my thing. And sports and athletics really kind of kept me out of trouble. And I joke around with some of the people that I, you know, that happen to still be around from where I grew up. And is the difference is I just didn't get caught, you know, so I was pretty lucky there. And then there was a point in my life where I just, you know, made a decision when I was about 15 years old that, you know, I was either going to be a criminal or I was going to somehow be in the legal community, whether that be a police officer or something. But I just knew that I wanted to be a lawyer. So, you know, I'm still that kid from the projects, though, you know, and people say, and it's kind of weird at 45 years old, I still have that chip on my shoulder, but I use that chip on my shoulder to my advantage. You know, everyone that I've known since I was a kid that, you know, that didn't really necessarily know me personally, but they saw me from the outside, you know, they were all kind of rooting against me and they're still rooting against me. And so, again, I use that kind of as like my superpower. When people talk about adversity builds strength, that's a real thing. And one of my first books, Ask More, Get More, the first line I say is, thank God I was born poor. So, that's who I was. I still harness that, but it's not who I am, right? You know, a lot of times people say, don't forget where you came from. I never forget where I came from, but I'm not going to stay there.
Awesome, man. So having gone from the kid from the projects to having one of the Inc. 500 fastest growing companies, being on TV, having a top rated podcast, like where did all the confidence come from to be able to make all those massive shifts?
Yeah, dude, you're like nailing the questions, man. You know, so it's really a two-part answer. I'm not always confident. You know, and I portray that image of confidence, but a lot of times deep down inside, I'm scared. And a lot of people won't admit that, you know. So, you know, Zig Ziglar talks about fear, false evidence appearing as real. But, you know, fear is actually a real thing, you know, that also you, if you use it the right way, it can, you, again, you can harness that fear, just like that, you know, that chip on my shoulder as a kid, and use it to your advantage. So, you know, when you start to, you know, get into your entrepreneurial career, you know, you really have no choice to be but to be confident and confident in your actions. You know, one of the things that I always tell people is if I'm, you know, I am a gambling man. And if I'm going to gamble or bet on anybody, I'm going to bet on myself. But that confidence, you know, takes time. You know, I think there's a difference between being, and I talk about this a lot, being, you know, optimistic. You know, a lot of entrepreneurs were just overly optimistic, and that's, it's not a bad thing, but you also have to have a dose of realism in there. And so I have both of those. So when things are going wrong, which happens to me all the time, like you and I were just talking before we recorded, you know, I'm realistic about that and understand that, you know, that things are going to go wrong. It's not going to be easy. But I also have that optimism knowing that, you know, if you can make it through, you know, you will have brighter days and things will get better.
Absolutely, man. So I got to ask, like, you literally, I mean, you wrote a book called The Blueprint to Business. You have, according to Inc., you have one of the fastest growing companies, like 3 years in a row. Like, just tell us, like, what is it that makes a successful business to you, man?
Yeah. So it's funny you ask, you know, because, you know, we're on this app called Clubhouse and there's a lot of people flexing, you know, and saying things like, again, 8 figures, 9 figures, 7 figures, whatever the numbers are. And everyone talks a big game. And I'm one of those guys. I talk about, you know, hundreds of millions in revenue, you know? And so the definition of success is a fluid, you know, definition, and it changes for everybody. And it means something different for everybody. And for the longest time, when I was younger, when I first started my business in 2008 in the worst economy in the history of the world up until now, you know, I, for me, success was growth. It was, you know, having a big company and having people around and doing, you know, tens of millions a year, year after year in revenue. But as I get older, you know, I've had mentors and, you know, kind of teach me these lessons that it's not necessarily about that. It's not about that gross revenue. It's about how much you can keep. And it was a hard lesson for me because those years when I was doing 50, 60 million a year, I don't think we did 60, but we got up close to 60 one year. You know, I was losing money and I didn't realize it because I didn't have accountants and a bunch of people that, you know, in the finance world that were showing me. I just saw the revenue and I saw this money coming in. And then there were times when I was like, my career was in, my business was almost completely shut down because I was caught off guard because I owed this guy $1 million and this guy 700,000. And it's like, how do you not know that? You know, I was on Grant Cardone's show back in the day called, Power Players, it was called. And, you know, he asked me that question that year. We did like 50 million in revenue. And he was like, you know, how much of that did you keep? And I didn't have the answer, you know? So success to me and you and to your viewers and to your listeners are different, you know, but I think ultimately as you get older, as I start to get older and I think about success, for me, it's more about that freedom to be able to do what you want, when you want. And it doesn't necessarily mean money. Yeah. And I think a lot of people are confused with that and think that, well, I need all this money in order to be happy or to be successful. No, because, you know, one of the mentors I had mentioned, I owed him $700,000. I didn't know him from a hole in the wall. He actually came out of nowhere. I was never heard of him. I was dealing with his partner. Guy's name's Charles Parisi from Brooklyn. Looks like a gangster, talks like a gangster. And you know what? We're good friends now. And I still joke around with him and say that he probably is a gangster. And you know, when someone like that shows up on your doorstep telling you that you now owe him $750,000, you start to really think about, you know, what you're doing. And he said to me, Mike, you know, congratulations. That year we did 33 million. He said, congratulations, you did 33 million. But what if I told you you lost two? And what if I told you, if I could show you how to do 15 million and keep two, which one would you choose? And I joked around and I said, oh, I'll do the 15, you know, I'll do the 30, you know? So now I'm at this point where it's like success is about, you know, how much you can keep, in, you know, from a financial standpoint, but really my true definition of success is to be able to do what I want, when I want, and ultimately to be happy.
Awesome, man. So you wrote the bestseller 5% More. Let's talk a little bit about the power of making small changes to achieve extraordinary results, my man.
Yeah, thanks, man. Yeah, so that was my second book, and it was funny how that book kind of came about. You know, I was I wrote my first book, Ask More, Get More, which is a Wall Street Journal, USA Today bestseller. You know, sold tens of thousands of copies, and you know, number one in like dozens, if not hundreds, of categories. And I didn't have an idea to write a second book. You know, a kid from the projects that was a Wall Street Journal, USA Today bestselling author. It's pretty cool. So I was in the spin class. I'm a big dude in the spin class with my girlfriend, and I didn't want to be there. You know, if you've ever done a spin class, they're kind of fun. You know, you got somebody in the front of the room, and now, you know, Peloton is obviously taking that, you know, kind of to a whole nother level, but it's the same kind of experience where you're getting hyped up and you got somebody in the front of the room that's, you know, kind of keeping you going. And you usually like, you know, some sort of hype, you know, music in there, and it's kind of a fun atmosphere. And, you know, she got to the end of the class and I'm dying. And it's a 45 minute class. And she said, look, I want you to give me 5% more effort. We have 5 minutes left in this class, and I want you to give me 5% more effort. If you give me 5% more effort, you're going to burn more calories. Your heart rate's going to increase. When you get off the bike, your metabolic rate's going to stay higher. You're going to burn more calories then. And ultimately, you're going to live a healthier and happier life. And then she said, anybody can do anything 5% more. And that's when the light bulb went off in my head. And I looked around the room. To the right was a pregnant woman, and two rows in front of me, there was a guy who was probably in his 80s, and everybody picked up the pace, and it just really clicked with me. And I was like, wow, man, I wonder if there's something, another book out there like it. And so I wrote that down. I got in my car and I wrote down 5% more. And I started doing research, and I couldn't find anything. And quite frankly, there wasn't really anything out there that talked about, you know, these small changes, these incremental changes, and how it works. And then I started to dive into the science. I'm not a science guy. I'm a lawyer by trade, but I started to dive into the science, and you look at some of these other entrepreneurs and these other people that are really, you know, kind of making a name for themselves. And they talk about, you know, going all in, or, you know, Grant Cardone. And I mean, I can text Grant right now. And, you know, he's been on my podcast twice. And I've, like I said, I've hung out with him, you know, a few times. And, you know, the 10X, you know, kind of mentality, I think a lot of people misunderstand really kind of what he's saying. You know, people talk about 10Xing, you know, or going all in and having no backup plan. When in fact, the science actually proves that your mind, your actual physiology, your brain chemistry, the neuroplasticity in your brain, the neurotransmitters in your brain, they don't work that way. You cannot sustain 10Xing your activity for a long period of time. We're just not genetically made that way, and it won't work. But what does work is small incremental changes, and you compound on those changes over and over and over again. It's that old, you know, ism, so to speak. If you saved a penny a day and compounded on it and added another penny each and every day and doubled it and doubled it and doubled it, in 30 days you'll have 5.3 million. My girlfriend said to me, Mike, I know you're not a math guy. You got to do the math on that. That doesn't make sense. Well, it's a reality. So it's the power of compounding and just adding to it each and every day, and it works virtually for anything in your life, whether it be fitness, whether it be business, or what have you. And that's really kind of how I've grown my business. You know, I've quote gone all in essence, but really what I've done is I've just added to it each and every single day.
Beautiful, man. That's really what it's all about. And I think people really have a tendency of overthinking it, and they think that success is made by like these massive things that you implement all at once and like doing 100 different things at once. But and those things, like, they can bring success, and every now and then you are gonna hit a home run. But in order to hit those home runs, you have to have the consistent foundation to support those home runs.
Yeah. I mean, what wins championships? I mean, just watch the movie Moneyball. It's singles, not home runs.
Exactly. Awesome. So let's talk a little bit more about the power of asking. Like, I always tell people that every question they don't ask is a no. So tell me a little bit about how that's played into your life and your journey up until this point.
Sure. Yeah. You know, so my first book is titled Ask More, Get More. And, you know, when I started to think about, you know, my background and when people would always ask me, say, Mike, what makes you so different, you know, from your family members or the people that you grew up with? And I started to think, I'm like, well, you know, we grew up in the same household, the same mom, same dad, same environment, same school system, like same everything, you know, but yet somehow I was able to rise above it all and do some great things. And I started writing it down, and I really kind of came to the one realization that as a young person, I just asked more questions and I asked for help. And if I didn't understand something, I just asked. And then and when you do that, you do get more. You're right. I mean, if you don't ask, you don't know. You know, Wayne Gretzky says, you know, famous quote, you miss 100% of the shots that you don't take. And so, you know, so many of us are afraid to ask. Look, to this day, sometimes even I'm afraid to ask, you know, and I wrote a book called Ask More, Get More. And so the other part about that too, is just to recognize that, you know, we are human beings and, you know, we're not robots. Unless you're an absolute, truly clinical sociopath or a narcissistic sociopath, you have to have those feelings. You also have to have those fears because, you know, even though, again, Zig Ziglar talks about false evidence appearing as real, you can harness that, you know, that fear. When I was practicing law, I was waiting for a hearing and I was super nervous and there was this guy next to me and I'm here in Mass and he happened to be from Texas for whatever reason. And I've seen him a bunch of times in the courtroom and I'm sitting there and I'm waiting. And I said, "Hey man," I said, "you know, how long have you been practicing?" He said, "you know, Michael, I've been practicing law 25 years. And I said, "you know, do you still get nervous?" And he says, "the day I stop getting nervous is the day I start practicing law." So, you know, you're going to have that, you know, those fears of asking, you're going to have those fears of being rejected because you're going to certainly be rejected more than you're going to be accepted, but that's just a part of life. And, but you, like you said, if you don't ask, you'll never know what the answer is and what, and you know, what's the downside? So you ask and they say no, like who cares? Yeah. You know what? I understand that it does mentally and physically hurt to hear that no. And in any of these salespeople, these sales trainers out there, they say, "oh, I love getting a no because I know I'm so much closer to a yes." That's bullshit. Like nobody likes the no. I don't care what anybody says, but you do mathematically know that eventually you will get to that yes. So, you know, that's really kind of what they're saying. They're saying, "all right, well, I know if I ask 10 times, I'm going to get two yeses," right? That's 20% close rate. And that's a pretty good close rate.
Awesome, man. So I do got to ask, going from a lawyer to an entrepreneur, there has to have been skills and knowledge that you were able to carry over that came in handy. What were some of the things that, like, maybe you were glad that you knew, or like just how did that carry over?
Yeah, you know, so as a young child, you know, in second grade, I wrote down that I wanted to be a lawyer when I didn't even, in fact, necessarily know what a lawyer was. You know, you get that when you're a kid, they ask you, you know, at least when I was a kid, you know, "hey, what do you want to be when you grow up?" And you write it down, you know, fireman, school teacher, policeman, doctor, whatever. I didn't even know what a lawyer was. I mean, I probably obviously did because I wrote it down. And so that was kind of like one of the things that I wanted in life. And so that was a goal, like since I was in second grade. It's kind of crazy when I look back and my mom showed that to me. I didn't even realize I did it. So, you know, as a lawyer, you know, I had two choices. I was actually selling cars out of college and I was very successful at it. And it was a great move for me. I didn't want to do it because of the image that people have of car salespeople. But again, Grant Cardone, that's exactly what he started out doing. Napoleon Hill, you know, from The Law of Success, you know, did the same thing. And also, by the way, studied law. So, you know, I had the choice of either getting my MBA or going to law school. And when I sat down with the owner of this dealership who happened to go to BC in Columbia, got his master's from Columbia, he's like, "look, you know, go and get your master's and, you know, come work for me in the finance office. And then, you know, maybe someday you can become the general manager and make a lot of money, blah, blah, blah." But I always knew that I wanted to be a lawyer. And I also knew that I would spend a little bit more time within the realm of academia, because it, you know, takes more time to get your law degree than it does your MBA. But I also knew that I would put myself in an elite class of individuals worldwide, as far as, again, academia, you know, you have, as far as the most learned people out there, you have priests and you have lawyers and then you have doctors, right? The people that study the most. So that's what I knew that I wanted. And when you're in law school, you know, you can choose what you want. So like I focused a lot on business and corporations and contract law, but I also spent half of my time in criminal law because that's what I knew, because most of my family members were in and around that space. So I went down those two and I learned a lot as a lawyer. And when I got a job as a lawyer, I got really lucky to work in-house for a company that I was already working for. So I kind of understood the business and I learned it, you know, pretty quickly. And as general counsel of a company, to be effective as a lawyer, you need to know every aspect of the business. And so that's kind of how that journey happened.
Awesome, man. So I got to ask, you mentioned that you know all these incredible people. I mean, you said you can text Grant Cardone if you wanted to. So how are you building your network and what does it take to get the attention of the Grant Cardones and the people like that?
Yeah, you know, it's a great question. And I tell you, this medium that you and I are on right now, I'm sure when we're done, we're going to trade our cell phone numbers, unless we already had them before, I forget. But, you know, so this platform and this medium of podcasting is such an amazing tool to use to network and create value for people. So like what you're doing for me is you're introducing me to your listeners, right? Which is great. And, you know, you and I are going to build a rapport and probably stay in touch. And so, you know, when you have something that you can offer to somebody like a Grant Cardone, you know, they're interested. And what happened with Grant is my book. So my first book, Ask More, Get More. Whenever I went to the airport, I would see his books. You know, I saw Seller Be Sold. I think it was Seller Be Sold. And then If You're Not First, You're Last, I would see those books. And then I would see those books right next to my book. And then I would also see, you know, like Tony Robbins right next to my book. And when I'm walking through these airports, I would see my books, before Tony Robbins' books. And so, and then there's another guy named Ryan Blair who wrote the book, Nothing to Lose, Everything to Gain, and also Rock Bottom to Rockstar. I reached out to Ryan. I haven't reached out to Tony, but I reached out to Ryan and I said, hey man, I read your book. Love to have you on my podcast. And now we've actually become pretty close friends, and it all started, you know, really with the book. And so that's for me, like when Grant Cardone reached out to me, with my first book, Ask More, Get More, he just loved the title. And he's like, this is, you know, interesting. Why don't you come on my show called Power Players? This is back in 2015, before Grant was really he was big, but he's not as big as he is now. And so that's kind of how I got his attention. So as I've built up my own podcast called The Alden Report, you know, I've had, you know, like I said, amazing guests on. I've had Les Brown on. I've had Nolan Bushnell, the founder of Chuck E. Cheese and Atari on. I've had Grant Cardone on, and Dean Graziosi and Armando Montalongo and Lewis Howes and just, you know, Ryan Blair, and just over and over and over again. But it took time to build up credibility in my podcast with all these other kind of rock star entrepreneurs. And so when you have that, you know, already kind of in your, in your kind of toolbox, so to speak, it's great to show that social proof of, hey, you know, these guys were on, you should come on too.
100%, man. I know that I interviewed Justin Saunders a while back, and he's known for helping people build up 6- and 7-figure marketing agencies. But one of the things that he told me was that he blew me off the first few times that I invited him on the show. And then I kept asking him, and finally he looked into me. And I had done enough with it. I had marketed myself hard enough that he finally said yes. So
that's it, man. You know, I'll tell you one in particular that's going on literally right now with me. So Mel Robbins, you know who she is? She wrote the book called The 5-Second Rule.
Yes.
Okay. So Mel, I'm in Massachusetts. Mel's in Massachusetts. She's also a lawyer. I'm a lawyer. We happen to meet on a flight to LA. We just happened to sit next to each other, and I didn't know who she was. Didn't know her from a hole in the wall. And we just started talking, and I realized, you know, what she did, and I didn't even know anything about her book, you know. And you know, she, what made her kind of quote famous is she did a great TEDx speech, and it really, her whole career kind of exploded from there. And you know, I asked her to be on my podcast. She said yes, but some team members shut it down. It's a couple of years ago, like three years ago. My podcast is, I think this is into my sixth year. So it wasn't as, you know, I didn't have as many, you know, people on the podcast to really kind of show her, you know, who has been on and the quality of my guests. Quite frankly, I've reached out again, and you know, you get no response. Right. And so just a couple of days ago, I sent another message to her. And I basically, you know, pulled what they call, you know, they call it the Columbo close, which is, I basically said, listen, I understand, you know, you're busy, and I know that we, you know, we couldn't connect the first time, and I haven't heard back from you, you know, since. And by the way, here's the thing with that technique. We've actually communicated. It's not like she's never responded to me. I'll get messages from people on LinkedIn say, hey, you didn't get my message, or I'm just going to stop talking to you. Dude, I don't even know who the fuck you are, man. Like we haven't even talked to each other. So don't try and close me by giving me some sort of FOMO. Like, I don't know who you are. And you know, we have no rapport. So you want to just try and tell me that you're going to walk away. Cool. Walk away. Cause we don't know each other. But Mel and I have actually talked. And so I said, look, I understand you're busy. So it's been, you know, a couple of years, 3 years now. So I like what you're doing. You know, we're both from Mass, both lawyers. Would love to have you on, but you know, maybe just, you know, it wasn't for you, or it's not for you. And guess what? She responded. She didn't respond to my last three messages. She responded and said, you know what? I'm just waiting. I have another book coming out and I'm waiting to, you know, to book on my podcast. So I will eventually have her on the podcast, but it's just that persistence too, right? Like you were saying with Saunders, you know, you just keep asking. And if you keep getting no's, like, what's the downside? You know what I mean? Like, what are you going to do? Offend somebody? You know, I mean, are you going to offend, like, Jim, you know, the book Good to Great? Book Good to Great by Jim Collins. It's an amazing book. And I was writing my book 5% More, and I was also reading his book. My book was almost done, and I read this great story in there about this athlete. And because I talk a lot about athletes and how athletes' lives are changed by like a fraction of a second, right? You know, because it's that little extra tiny little effort. And he talks about some athletes in his book. And I was like, wow, I want to put that story in my book. So I did. But I reached out to Jim Collins. I mean, he's huge as far as, you know, authors and great books. And over and over and over again, he has said no. But he actually handwrote a note, sent it to me, still saying no. Right. But it was actually pretty cool that he actually took the time to handwrite the note, because he doesn't need to come on my podcast. And maybe someday when his book comes out, maybe he will say, you know what? Yeah, let's, you know, let's do it. I'll have you on. But yeah, like, what's the worst that's going to happen? Who cares? Like, you know, just keep asking.
100%, man. There's a huge amount of power in that. And like you said, people have this fear of being annoying with stuff like that, but It's not like you're being annoying trying to reach out and sell them something in this scenario. You're reaching out and saying, hey, I respect you and I know you're busy, so I'm just going to keep following up until you see it.
Yeah. You know, it's like, that's it, man. And that's the, you know, one of the keys, you know, to quote success is consistency, persistence, you know, and there's a delicate balance of being like annoying and persistent, you know, and you know, like for instance, like, you know, with your podcast, with my podcast or others, you know, let's walk through it. So Justin Saunders doesn't know you. I don't know. I don't know who he is, but let's, you know, he doesn't know you and you're reaching out to him. You like him. You see what he's doing. He's done some great stuff. You want to have him on as a guest. What is it going to do? Right. So what it's going to do two things. It's going to add value to you and to him, because you're going to create some cool content that he can then repurpose. Right. And usually it's, you know, this term evergreen, meaning it can be used forever. And so there's no cost to him. Like, what's the downside? The downside is what, maybe half an hour of time that, you know, that he has to kind of set aside. But either way, I mean, it's valuable to him. It's valuable to me. It's valuable to you on both sides. So you're adding value to him and he's adding value to you at the same time. So it's a win. It's truly like a win-win scenario. It's just a matter of, you know, whether or not they want to book the time, you know, to get you on. And when you have someone like super famous, like Gary Vee knows that, you know, I almost booked him on my podcast. But it came down to, you know, he wanted to get paid. Cause I don't know Gary Vee, right? And I almost paid, you know, it was $10,000 for 15 minutes. And I was like, man, does that make sense for me? And the answer was no. Like, I like Gary Vee, but not that much. You know, if at some point, you know, he'll come on my podcast and I'm not going to pay for it, you know? So you'll get to the point where you might find that there's just a, you know, there's a roadblock that just doesn't make sense for you. And then you just move on to the next one. So yeah, I mean, the persistence is key.
Awesome, man. So let's talk about your process of writing a book. Like, what does that look like?
Great question, man. Dude, you're doing a great job. So yeah, you know, it's been different for the other book. So the first book, Ask More, Get More, was a bit of a stream of consciousness. I just started writing stories down when the working title was What Makes You So Different, like I'd mentioned earlier, from all my family members. And I would just write these stories down and think about some of the things that I did that was different. You know, and one of the big things was for me was I just thought, you know, differently than most. And I'm not even sure where I got that from. I think actually, if I had to really kind of really dive into it, it came from truly actually my mom and dad, and then coaches and teachers, you know. So I started writing that book and it just turned into something. And at first it was junk. Like, it wasn't good. But then I gave it to some people and I said, hey, can you read this for me and just, you know, give me your feedback and just edit it. So I like printed it up, you know, at like a Kinko's. I didn't put it up on Amazon because I just wanted to just print it up and give it to people and have them give me feedback. So that took some time. And then I got it to a point where I'm like, all right, well, let me get an editor. So I got an editor they, you know, I ran it through their system, so to speak. And they were like, yeah, this is pretty good. And then I was like, all right, well, you know, now I think I want to take it to the next level of getting an actual publisher. And Grant Cardone's first publisher is Greenleaf Publishing. So I said, well, if it's good enough for Grant, it's good enough for me. I reached out to them. And they're the only ones that I reached out to. And they came back with a 26-page yes. 26-page yes, meaning they said, we're going to do it, but let me tell you other things that's wrong with your book and how we're going to fix it. Literally 26 pages of explaining like what they were going to do. Ultimately, they said I needed to rewrite the book. So in that scenario, you get the book deal. You kind of rework the book, rewrite the book. I had an editor that they assigned me to, and I worked with that editor almost on a daily basis. But at the same time, I'm running a business. I was talking to an entrepreneur earlier today and coaching him on his book writing process. And he was worried about the fact that he's running a business and he doesn't have time to write the book. There's plenty of time to write the book. You don't have to sit down and spend, 10 hours a day to write it. You can just block out time. Or if an idea just comes to you, you can just record it, like on your notes, on your recording notes on your phone, or you could actually write in your notes on your phone. Or if you happen to be at a computer, you can just start writing. And then you just kind of keep track of that stuff. And then it's at some point you put it all together into one document and then you just kind of work it. Like I'm an author now, but I wasn't an author then. And I didn't know anything about the process. I just knew that I had a story that I wanted to tell that I felt as though that could help people, that could actually truly add value. And it would certainly boost my profile too. So that's how it starts. You just start, and a lot of people have that, like, what do I do? How do I start? You just start. You don't worry about sentence structure. You don't worry about grammar. You don't worry about spelling errors. You don't worry about any of that stuff. You don't worry about the fact that, you're telling a story about a family member that really puts them in an unsavory light. You just write. And then you get to the point where it's truly in a book format, and you look at it and say, all right, cool. Like, now we can publish it. Now we can put it out to the public and feel good about it. So that's kind of how I wrote my first two books. My last book, Blueprint to Business, actually was, the audio was done first. And really what it was my podcast. A lot of times I'll just go straight to Mike about an idea. And so, I had a bunch of these different podcasts built up that was just me, no guest, just talking about particular subjects. And I was like, wow, there's a theme here, and I said to one of the people that worked for me, I said, let's get all that stuff transcribed and let's put it in a quote book format and let's just see what it looks like. And, it was a lot of words, and it was, to me, it looked very, fairly organized, but it was raw, man. Like, it needed a lot of work, And so, but I started there. So I started recording it first, and then I submitted it to my publisher because I had a two book deal with them. They said, yeah, we like it. And then what they did was, again, they assigned me an editor, and we just kind of went through the process. So if you're going to write a book, depending on, kind of how you do it, especially if you write it yourself, it's going to take, several months and sometimes, several years. Everyone's process is a little bit different, but I would say to people who are thinking about writing a book, if you're looking for the fastest way to write a book, it would be to record it. There's my Massachusetts accent, record it, then transcribe it. And then from there you can get in and, kind of work it, on the keyboard.
Awesome, man. That'll save people a whole massive amount of time. And I know that some of the sections in my book, I actually talked, recorded, and transcribed as well. So I can vouch for that method myself.
There you go. Yeah.
Awesome, man. So I know you're working on another book now. It's called Bestseller Secrets, correct?
It is. Yeah. Yeah.
So,
yeah. So I wrote that. Secrets. Yeah. So I wrote that one. It's interesting, man. Kind of like what happened is so, when I wrote my first book, Ask More, Get More, built up a pretty large marketing company. We've done some amazing things and just, just crushed it in a bunch of different areas. And I said, I'm going to take my traditional marketing know-how and we're going to add some, gasoline on it and fuel to the fire. We're just going to crush it. We're going to be a number one New York Times bestseller. Like, it wasn't even a question. Like, that was, it was just going to happen. Right. And, I was, crushed, and hurt when my book came out because it did not hit the New York Times. It did not do that. We did some good things with it, but we didn't get to the levels that we needed to. And as an entrepreneur, a lot of times, obviously, if we have temporary defeats or what some people call failures, we go back at it again and say, all right, how, what can I do differently? And I did that over and over and over again. And I learned the hard way a lot of times. And I spent literally millions of dollars, not just on my first book, but all of my books, trying to figure it out, trying to figure out the process of not only marketing books, because marketing a book and selling a book and those two together are different than any other product or service that I've ever seen. And so what I figured out was there is a system, just like everything else in this world, there is a methodology that if it's implemented properly for any book in any genre and in any type of platform, whether you're self-published, whether you're with what they call a vanity publisher or a hybrid publisher, or whether you're with a traditional publisher, there are just certain things that need to be implemented properly in order to achieve quote success, which means for me, truly becoming a bona fide, legitimate bestseller. Now, if that means for you, you want to be a number one bestseller on Amazon in one category, cool. Like if that's success for you, that's great. We can do that for you. If you want to be a number one bestseller on Amazon in three categories, dozens of categories, if you want to be ranked, you know, in the top 25 books against all books in the world on Amazon, which is a big deal. If you want to be the number one book on barnesandnoble.com, I just figured it out. And there are a lot of other services out there, but one of the things that I figured out was that because I have a marketing company, because we have a large database, we developed this internal system, and I call it a closed loop marketing system, that just works over and over and over again. And then the crazy part was I was on a podcast like yours. Someone must have heard it. And I'd never done this for anybody else, right? I only did it for myself. And they reached out to me and said, look, I have a client. I charged them $15,000 just to be an Amazon bestseller. Now, that's not a crazy price, but I think it's a little high. And he wants to be a Wall Street Journal USA Today bestseller. He's a businessman. He's got a radio talk show on AM. He wants to syndicate it. He wants to be a speaker and increase his speaking fees. Can you do it? And I was like, well, I've never done it for anybody else. So let me just be open, honest, and candid with you there. But I've done it for myself over and over again, and I just know it works. So if you're willing to take that risk, which was, by the way, was a six-figure risk, yeah, let's do it. You know, and there are no guarantees in life. There's no, like, you can't guarantee that type of stuff. As far as, Wall Street, USA Today, New York Times, you can get the numbers, but guaranteeing it is, if anybody guarantees it, you just run as fast as you can, because those lists are curated, meaning there are people behind it. So my book, Bestseller Secrets, which, by the way, I had publishers and authors ask me not to publish, is literally everything I've done. And some of the stuff is in, you know, you hear these terms on Clubhouse of black hat or Trojan horse marketing or growth hacking and things like that. It's really none of that stuff, but it's leveraging the systems that are in place, that are out there for people to your advantage. You know, so I told somebody when I wrote my first book that I wasn't going to game the system. And they said, well, that's great, but in order to win, you need to at least play in the game. And so when you see some of these big time authors and, you know, that are in number one bestsellers, most of them are either celebrities or they're musicians, or they're somehow in the public eye, they're politicians. So you're competing with them. And so if you're not famous like me, you know, you maybe have some acclaim, you have a decent Instagram following or whatever, but you're just not famous. You need to figure out a way to leverage what you have and also leverage the systems that are in place. And so I put that all together in my book, Bestseller Secrets. By the way, it's bestsellersecretsbook.com. I give the information away for free, and, you know, a la Gary V, and I'll just be candid with your listeners. Like most of you, and I say this right in the book, I tell everybody exactly what I've done. And actually most people can in fact do it if they wanted to do it, but they won't. Why? They're busy. They just don't want to learn it. And that's okay. But I just kind of show people, like, here it is, like, this is what I've done. And if you want to implement it, cool. I'm happy for you, because I know what it's like to write a book and then nothing happens. I know what it's like to write a book and your family members don't buy it, or they don't review it for you, or all the things that you would just assume that a family member would do. So that's why I wrote Bestseller Secrets. And by the way, I wrote it actually a couple of years ago. Again, they asked me to shelve it, which I did. And now I'm bringing it back out because I feel as like there is a need. There's a lot of misinformation out there. There's a lot of, I mean, look, I saw this company today, and this guy's like, you know, has like this author academy and all these things and how to become a bestseller and all this other stuff, but he's not even an author. And then I saw another one, the guy was an author, but his book hasn't done shit. And I was like, it drives me crazy. It's like, you know, if you're going to teach somebody how to do something, you should have at least done it yourself. And that's why I wrote Bestseller Secrets.
I love that, man, because that's actually exactly why we wrote the Limitless Expansion Secrets book, because we saw so many things in the marketing industry and just in general, like people that were teaching people how to build online businesses. And they were it. I feel like people literally overcomplicate things just so that you have to pay them to do it or just so you have to go buy their course. And it's literally simple systems that people just don't understand how to use yet.
Right. And then, you know, and a lot of times, again, you know, because we are busy or we're kind of, you know, we got blinders on or what have you, we would just rather have somebody else do it for us. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. And so I realized that there's a need for like, you know, a company and someone like me who has a background in doing it over and over and over again. I, by the way, I've been really quiet about it too. And be like my book, you know, it's again, it's bestsellersecretsbook.com. Like that website, I've owned it for a while. It wasn't up and active until just recently because in you couldn't find it on my websites. Like in my personal page is michaelalden.net. You couldn't find it on my company websites. It just wasn't a part of my business, you know, but this is actually turning into a business now. And you know, it comes down to that thing too, right? If you're passionate about it, like I'm super passionate about it. I'm passionate about my primary business, which is selling health and wellness products to help people as well. But I'm also super passionate about this. So I'm kind of going down these two parallel paths in this book, you know, world, has really kind of opened up my horizons and saying, wow, there's just a real need for it out there. Cause you know, look, there's all these courses people can buy and all this other crap out there, quite frankly, but I give you the information. Here it is. Here's the playbook. Do it yourself. Or if not, you can just hire us to do it for you. And I'm not going to charge you crazy money like some of these companies are that are out there doing it. It's just, it can be done in a cost-effective way.
100%, man. That's really the way it should be. So I do got to ask, you've got the money from all the books. You've got the money from your companies. Where are you investing so that you have like some passive income coming in?
Yeah, great question. You know, so there's been a lot of different things that I've done throughout the years. And so as an entrepreneur, when you make money, you're trying to find other things so that you can take your money and put it to work, right? And that's, they say, is kind of like the definition of wealth when your money is actually making money for you. And, you know, a couple of different things. I was never really into the stock market, but I am now. And by the way, when you look at like apps like Robinhood, which, you know, which is just an amazing app. At first, I didn't think that their business model was going to work, which was they were the first million subscribers. The first million people to download it, they were giving you some, you know, a little bit of free Bitcoin and things like that because they were kind of in that crypto space. So for me, actually, crypto was a big one and just traditional stocks, but also trading them myself and managing them myself. A lot of people talk about putting them in index funds and you can do that. I've put some money into things like REITs, real estate investment trusts, which, you know, give you a guaranteed kind of return on your money. But to be totally honest, candid, and open with you, you know, a lot of entrepreneurs aren't going to tell you what I'm about to tell you is I've taken a lot of money, like millions of dollars, and put it into things that just haven't worked. And so I've lost millions of dollars over the past, you know, I don't know, 7 years or so. And so like financially, that really hurts, right? But at the same time, I understand that as an entrepreneur, when you're doing that, I look at it like research and development, right? Because most of the things you do aren't going to work. I'll give you an example. Like I launched a vodka called Emery Vodka, won a bunch of awards. You know, we were distributed in 31 states doing great things, but ultimately it just wasn't going to work. And to compete with the big boys, you need like tens of millions of dollars. So we had to shelve that project. I backed an artist. His name was Blake Emery, actually. That cost me probably about $500,000. Just didn't work. I launched a daily fantasy sports company. Cost me millions of dollars. Didn't work. I had to shut it down. You know, so I can just give those stories over and over and over again. But it's that one business or that one opportunity that does in fact, you know, kind of make up for all the losses. And so my books, again, millions of dollars marketing my books, my accountants, look, I wrap NASCARs with my books. Like that's an insane thing to do. It doesn't make any sense. It's cool. It was fun. Looked awesome. You know, I got great pictures and great images and videos and all that other stuff, but it didn't market and sell books. And so, you know, if to answer your question, really what I've done is I've reinvested in myself and I've lost a bunch of times and I continue to reinvest in that. So, but traditional stuff though, too, You know, like Grant Cardone talks about, hey, don't buy a house. Well, okay, well, hold on. From a real estate guy, to me, I understand where he's coming from and what he says, but to me, I still think that it doesn't really necessarily make a lot of sense to me. So, you know, I live in a 6,000 square foot house in a private neighborhood in the town that I grew up with that I built. And that's where I put a significant amount of money, into it. You know, when you're buying a house that's, you know, valued at what it's valued, you know, you got to come up with a lot of cash just to put that money down too. So, so for me, it's really kind of reinvesting in myself because I'm still young. I'm only 45. Right. And so, you know, I look at the opportunities, you know, a lot of times as entrepreneurs, we look outside. We look at these other outside things because there's a lot of shiny objects out there and I'm one of them. But what I've also learned is take a look at what you already have and take a look at what you already have and figure out how to way to extract more pay dirt out of that and really kind of, you know, dive deep into the things that you already have and extract more value out of that. And for me, that's what I've done over the years. And sometimes you lose and sometimes you win.
Awesome, man. So I got to ask though, like, how do you overcome those failures when they do happen on like the mindset level? Cause I know that, I mean, you go out and do something big, you put money into it, it doesn't work. It can almost be debilitating. I mean, I'm currently out almost 50 grand in a software that I can't sell myself currently. And though I have other things that make up for it, it still hurts. And financially it hurts, but mentally and like it definitely drains me. So how do you come back from that, man?
Man, I ask the same question all the time. And just so you know, we all feel the same thing. And it is really hard. You know, it we talk about mindset and we talk about how to, you know, reset your mind and how to, you know, think positive, you know, the power of positivity and, you know, Norman Vincent Peale, great book. I would tell people to check it out. And, you know, there's a lot of different mindset things, but the real answer is that it's going to hurt. And I was just on the phone with a mentor of mine for 2 hours on Sunday, asking the very same question you just asked me. And he's generated literally billions of dollars. He's not a billionaire, but he's generated billions of dollars in revenue. And he couldn't really quite give me the answer. But other than the fact that, you're going to go through the pain in order to feel the successes. And it's crazy. Like I had Les Brown on my podcast and I asked Les that same very question. And he said, Michael, it's the struggle that creates life. You know, he talked about a story that there was a little boy walking in the woods and he was walking in the woods. He sees this butterfly who was trying to struggle to break out of the cocoon. And this little boy was watching it. And the butterfly was struggling. Finally, the cocoon broke open and the butterfly fell from the tree, landed on the floor of the forest, kind of dusted itself off and got up and flew away. And then a couple of weeks later, the same boy saw the same thing. And he saw, again, a butterfly was struggling. It was in the tree. And this time, though, the little boy had a safety pin with him. And he went up to that cocoon and he put these additional tiny little like holes to help the butterfly break through, you know, to give him a little bit of a, like a push, so to speak. And the same exact thing happened. The butterfly opened its wings. It fell to the ground, but this time it died, didn't fly away. And then his response was, Michael, it's the struggle that creates life. And man, you know what? It doesn't comfort you, you know, when you hear that, especially when you're going through it. I had posted a quote before. Winston Churchill said, if you're going to go to hell, you might as well go all the way through it. And that's what it is, man. You feel that pain and it hurts and you have to figure out a way to kind of get through it. And it's hard. There's just no other way to describe it. But you also do have to recognize that if you can get through it, because a lot of times you have no options. Like, what are you going to do? Right? Like, what am I going to do? I have a big house, a mortgage, a family, an ex-wife with, you know, giant alimony payments. Like, you know, I got a business, I got people that work for me. You know, when I get my ass kicked, you know, I joke around, I say, I get kicked in the nuts over and over and over again. You know, it's like, but now it's almost like I have like literally like fucking balls of steel. Cause I just know that I'm going to get kicked there. So I might as well either protect them and just recognize that I'm going to get beat down and just knowing that it's going to happen, but also knowing that at some point, you will get there. You just have to just keep, you have to keep at it. You know, Napoleon Hill talks about, you know, most successful people are 1 foot with 1 foot over the brink of failure. And it happens over and over and over again. I mean, Elon Musk, you know, risked everything and he was sleeping on couches, you know, after PayPal. And so, you know, so it just happens and it's just, it's fucking, it's a part of life. And I don't know that I gave you the answer. And I don't know that it makes anybody feel any better other than the fact that I haven't met one entrepreneur that hasn't been through hell and back multiple times over.
Neither have I.
This is what it is. And it's not just entrepreneurship, right? It's just life. You know what I mean? It's just life. Like, I don't care if you're born into literally royalty. You know, they have struggles too. They're just different struggles. Like we all have struggles. And so, you know, I tell people, my family members who, you know, that are still struggling, I said, you know, again, the difference between me and them right now, like financially, is just, I'm just playing with bigger numbers. You know, we still have the same struggles. We're all human. Like there's no changes there. Like we're, you know, like just, there is no difference between us. You know, I tell people, you know, there is, you know, if you look at your DNA, and, you know, because now we're really good at, you know, genetically mapping and looking at DNAs and DNA profiles. And we're also really good at, you know, neuroplasticity, which is the study of the brain and how the brain can like physically change and all these things. And we're getting really good at it, you know, from a scientific standpoint. It's still a lot of things that we don't know. But here's the one thing that I definitely 100% know doesn't exist. None of us have a failure gene and none of us have a success gene. Doesn't exist. So we're pretty much, when we're born, unless we're born with some sort of like actual physical abnormality, we're all kind of like start out with a level playing field. It's just a matter of what you decide you're going to do with this life that you're given and recognizing that when you are playing in this game of life, you're going to get beat up, man. You know, Mike Tyson also said too, you know, everyone has a plan until you get punched in the face. When I was a kid, I used to get punched in the face all the time, like really get punched in the face, you know? And so, you know, and it's the same thing in business. When you lose that 50K, you know, it might be gone forever. And so you can dwell on it and think about, man, like what a mistake you made, or you could just move on. And I do it all the time. I just move on. And you like, man, you're like, fuck, did I make a mistake? Like, was that stupid? Like, you know, I'll say this too, as an entrepreneur, like for those that are listening, that entrepreneurs in particular, including myself, we fall in love with ideas and business ideas and products to our own detriment. And I do it all the time. And that's probably why I've lost a lot of times where like this vodka called Emery Vodka, if you look at it, it's just beautiful. The product itself is beautiful. It's made in the United States. It's triple filtered, you know, certified organic. I mean, the whole thing was just a great product. Everything about it was just gorgeous. You know, we won all sorts of awards, but I was not being realistic with myself that I thought that I could compete with the big boys and I couldn't. And I, you know, and it's hard to swallow that pill, you know, or like I thought I was going to compete with DraftKings with my company. And that was just unrealistic. And I tried though. I mean, I really tried and sunk a bunch of money into it, but there was a point too, where I was just so invested like emotionally that I kind of willed it into this space where it didn't belong. Like we, you know, we should have just shut it down much earlier, you know? And that's something that I think a lot of entrepreneurs have to really kind of step back and say to yourself, like, is this really going to work? You know, and you know, you're going to get, you know, in your head, you're going to hear the no's or whatever, but honestly being objective and trying to step back and say, is this really going to work? And if the answer is no, then you just have to shut it down.
Absolutely, man. So we're getting to the end of our time, or the time that we have here. We both got stuff we got to get to. I like to ask everybody that comes on the show, if you could go back and have a conversation with yourself before you ever started any one of your businesses, what would you make sure that you knew and understood?
I would make sure that I really understood the numbers and make sure that I really understood what capitalization means, because I've bootstrapped all of my businesses. Even to this day, I'm still continuing to bootstrap, and I've never had working capital. And so, you know, when you think about starting a business, and I've had friends, and when I first started some of my businesses, to say, whatever you think you need, multiply it times three at least. And so understanding that, yeah, look, you can bootstrap stuff and that's okay. But also recognizing that if you're going to bootstrap it, you should think about, you know, having that secondary source or primary source of income and working your, you know, your side hustle, your side business until that side business does in fact get to a point where not only can it sustain life, but it can also, you know, sustain your life and your lifestyle. And so there's a great book called The 10% Entrepreneur that talks about that. Like, you know, you don't have to go all in. And so for me, if I look back and talk to my old self, I would say, you know, make sure you understand the numbers and make sure you understand that you actually need more than you think.
Awesome, man. So what is the best way for people to see more of you and get involved with you?
Yeah, sure. If people want to check me out, most of my social media handles, it's at Mike Alden 2012. Again, at Mike Alden 2012, or just Mike Alden. You can just Google me as well. But, you know, hit me up on Instagram, Snapchat. I'm on Clubhouse. It's Mike Alden. Facebook, you know, same thing, Mike Alden 2012. Or you can just go to michaelalden.net. And if you're interested in my book, Bestseller Secrets, you can go to bestsellersecretsbook.com. Again, it's bestsellersecretsbook.com.
Awesome, man. Thanks so much. Thank you so much for your time today. You dropped so many bombs and we covered so many topics that, like, honestly, I hope everybody's taking notes. I know I was.
Well, thanks for having me, man. You're great. You asked a lot of great questions. Hopefully we added some value and, it was fun. I'm glad we did it.
Awesome, man. I appreciate you.
If you learned anything from this show, make sure you leave a review and check out the description to join our community and grab some free resources. And make sure you subscribe so you never miss an episode of Virtually Limitless.